Good morning and thank you for joining us here today as we have some very important information to share with the public regarding coronavirus COVID-19 and three cases that are now been determined to be positive by the Erie County Public Health Lab as of late yesterday afternoon. Before we go into the particulars associated with those cases, I do want to introduce the individuals who are here with me at the podium, and then we'll go into a brief statement with regards to what we're dealing with here and then go through the PowerPoint presentation. Other opportunities for our individuals here to speak and then open it up to questions. Of course, to my immediate left, we have our Health Commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein. I want to thank her and her incredible staff who've been working countless hours over the last few days, even before we had a positive case, for the great work that they're doing. To her left, we have Dan Neverth from our Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, our Commissioner. I thank Dan for his tremendous effort and his staff's work. To his immediate left, Scott Petronic from the Erie County Sheriff's Office. The Erie County Sheriff's Office, of course, has worked with us in many emergencies in the past, and I thank them for their tremendous work. We're also joined by Karen Gambino from Deaf Access Services, and I thank her for being here so that she can share information to those that are from our hearing impaired community. Also joined by our Deputy County Executive Maria White, our Department of Public Works Commissioner Bill Gary, our Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Greg Butcher, our Commissioner of the Department of Social Services, Marie Cannon, our Commissioner of the Department of Personnel, Tim Hoags, as well as our Director of Workforce Development, Jeffrey Szymanski, and Chief John Greenan from the Erie County Sheriff's Office. First, a message to the people of Erie County and Western New York. We are entering uncharted waters. What we will be seeing in the next few weeks is something we would not have even foreseen to ask of the public just a couple weeks ago. The coronavirus does not discriminate based on age, sex, race, net worth, or for that matter, political affiliation. Folks, we are all in this together. I ask for everyone to take what we are going through at this point very seriously. We must all act appropriately to protect ourselves, our families, our neighbors, our community, and for that matter, our country. I know we can do this because we've done it in times in the past, maybe not in situations exactly like what we see today, but we've come together in various situations when our community needed it, and I know we can do it again. I'm asking for everyone to truly take this seriously and to be in solidarity with each other, because one way we're going to get through this is by working together and not disregarding the recommendations from health, safety, and other officials. I know we can do it if we are in solidarity with each other. Yesterday, I posted something on social media saying we need to be in solidarity with each other, and the best way to do is to show your friends and neighbors you are. Fly your flag. Fly your American flag to show that you understand the seriousness of this issue and that you are going to be in solidarity and we're going to work together to get through this. Fly it on your house. If you don't have a flagpole, print out an American flag and put it in your window. Let's work together, folks. We need to do this seriously, and I know if we do, we will get through this. We cannot disregard the warnings from health officials. We cannot disregard the warnings from public safety officials. If we do this, if we do it properly, we'll be able to hopefully stem the tide of the coronavirus, which, as I noted, is already in our community. With that, I'd like to go through a PowerPoint presentation to talk a little bit about where we are today. At various times, I'll ask Dr. Burstein to come to the podium so she can talk a little bit more about the health-related issues, as well as Commissioner of Emergency Services Dan Neverth, and some of the other actions that we're taking today. First off, as noted and has previously been shown, the information is in this PowerPoint presentation is current as of the date of this presentation, and truthfully, some of the information that is included on here may already be outdated from when it was prepared yesterday and earlier this morning. The situation is rapidly evolving, and for the latest numbers and our guidance, we always recommend that you go to our Erie County Department of Health coronavirus page, which is www.erie.gov/COVID-19, COVID-19. I've already talked about the participants and who's in the room, so. There were 36 samples that were tested by our Erie County Department of Public Health Lab yesterday. The results were received later in the afternoon. 33 of those samples were negative. 3 were positive. As you know, there were 3 positive, though I don't think we announced exactly how many tests had been completed. I'm going to go into some of the specifics associated with each of these tests that determined to be positive. First is a female in her 30s that had recently traveled out of state and is currently in quarantine in a private residence. The next is a male in his 30s that had recently traveled to Westchester County and is currently in quarantine in a private residence. The third is a female in her 20s who had recently traveled to Italy and is currently in quarantine at a private residence. None of these individuals are in hospital. Each of these individuals is recovering from whatever symptoms they may have had. And we want everyone to understand that none of them are hospitalized. We've had many rumors about individuals who've tested positive in Erie hospitals. All those, as of right now, are incorrect. They're not true. We have tested individuals in hospitals for coronavirus COVID-19. We have not found a positive with any of those individuals. Without identifying the specifics associated where each of these individuals live and in random order, there is an individual that has COVID-19 in the city of Buffalo. There is an individual who has COVID-19 in the town of Grand Island. And there's an individual who has COVID-19 in the town of Clarence. I will let Doc Burstein. First off, the public health lab, sorry, I skipped over it. In total, 58 county residents have been tested in total by all the labs that test. That would include 1 at CDC, 9 at Wadsworth, and then the remainder. So 48 at the Erie County Public Health Lab. The 3 have been positive, the 47 negative, and 8 are pending, included in a batch today, which I'll have the doc talk a little bit more about. And I'm going to turn it over to Doc to talk about the testing capability and changed protocols.
Sure. So our Erie County Health Lab, which is a regional public health lab for the western part of New York State, has the CDC FDA-approved COVID-19 test. And so we have been testing both residents from Erie County that we have approved, the Erie County Health Department has approved for testing based on CDC's criteria. And we've also been performing tests of specimens collected in other counties in the western part of New York State, again, because we are the regional public health lab, that we received the specimens from those other local health departments. So we have, as of today, we have 2 machines that have been approved by the New York State Department of Health Wadsworth's laboratory to be able to conduct this testing. Before today, there was only 1 that was approved. So we'll be able to rev up testing and ultimately be able to perform testing of more specimens and from more individuals. So again, we have we are working with our local health providers. So if an individual feels that they may have symptoms or a potential exposure from a contact with somebody who has a COVID-19 positive test or from travel in a high-risk area, and whether or not they have symptoms, they should talk to their healthcare provider. If their healthcare provider agrees that they meet the criteria for testing, then they can call our Erie County Public Health Lab. And again, because we now believe that we have community transmission in our area, because we're seeing community transmission in other areas throughout New York State, we have opened up the testing so people don't need specifically a travel history. They can have the into one of these high-risk countries outside of the United States. They can have any travel history anywhere outside of Erie County, or they could have fever and any respiratory symptoms, and we will be able to approve the testing. But again, the tests have to be authorized by the Erie County Health Department, because we get a referral from a physician. So if people show up to our Erie County Public Health Lab, or they show up to one of the sites in the community where we're collecting specimens on individuals, we will not be able to do the testing. So, is that next? So what we are doing now is currently we have a total of 59 people who are in quarantine. 58 is a voluntary quarantine, or it's what we call precautionary quarantine. And one person is in a mandatory quarantine, and that's actually enforceable by law. That is, we serve them with a legal document, a commissioner's order, and they are legally obligated to follow our instructions to remain in quarantine. And then we've had 151 people complete quarantine. So,
I just say we expect that number to change today because our epidemiologists are doing contact tracing, with the individuals who have tested positive starting last night as well as today. So we do anticipate the quarantine numbers to go up. And once we have more accurate numbers later in the day, and these numbers are accurate as of this morning, but we do anticipate that number to go up during the day.
All right. As our county executive mentioned, this is a very fluid situation. So as we conduct the case investigations, we will put more people in quarantine. And because some people have been asymptomatic and they've served their 14 days of quarantine, they'll be released from quarantine. So that's a revolving door. It's a very fluid number. Every day it's a different number in and out. And also with quarantine, it's just not stay at home. I mean, we are following these individuals where they're monitoring their temperatures twice a day. We are checking in with them once to twice a day by phone or by text. We're having them take a picture of a temperature log that we give them to complete, where they take their temperature twice a day, and then we check in with them, make sure that screening for any type of symptoms that could be consistent with COVID-19, making sure that they have the food and, you know, if they need any mental health care, you know, all their needs are being met. And so we have an aggressive strategy here that is really an evidence-based strategy recommended by CDC to contain by case control measures the virus within our community. So what we want to do is identify individuals who are at risk, either by exposure or potential to a case or travel, and then contain them, remove them from our society and for the rest of the public. Because again, this virus has no vaccine and there is no antiviral, so we have to rely on what we call non-pharmaceutical interventions. And so we are implementing this, and again, we have government authority to implement these strategies. Thanks. So the strategy here is really to change the epi curve, to reduce the peak of our what we expect to see with the number of COVID-19 cases. So this is a graph that is adapted from a CDC graph that shows under the purple area the peak number of cases that we expect to see from the COVID-19 virus if we take no action in our community. And so where we're concerned is that where the cutoff is in our healthcare system of being able to care for the number of people who become very, very ill with COVID-19. So we want to keep the peak of that curve below that cutoff level where the healthcare system can care for those people who are very, very ill. So by putting these interventions in place, these non-pharmaceutical interventions, hopefully we'll be able to shift the curve to what we would see the area under the slash. So it's a much lower peak. Hopefully that peak is below what we anticipate to see with the capacity of our healthcare system, and then we'll be able to take care of all the people that are well. Because remember, there is, although most people with COVID-19 infection have minimal symptoms or no symptoms at all, there is that 15% to 20% of individuals who become very, very ill and require hospitalization. They may require a bed in the ICU. They may require ventilators or ECMO. And our healthcare system has a limited capacity for this. So we have to keep the curve down so it'll stay below the capacity of our healthcare system.
Can you describe to the public what ECMO means?
Sure. It's actually a heart lung machine. So it really acts as like the pump and as your heart, and it takes the blood out of the person's system, and so it's like a bypass from the heart, and then it you know, aerates the blood. It you know, takes them through a chamber to get oxygen, and then it returns into the body. So it's like a replacement for the heart and lung so that your people's bodies will be able to get the appropriate oxygenated blood supply. So we have a different type of non-pharmaceutical interventions. Make sure you're on the right page.
It is.
So we have personal non-pharmaceutical interventions, like we know what we can do at in ourselves to keep ourselves healthy, and that would be washing our hands and staying away from sick people. Then we have community non-pharmaceutical interventions, what we can do as a community working together to enhance physical distancing, and then environmental non-pharmaceutical interventions, and that's basically keeping our surfaces, frequently touch surfaces, clean, because the virus we know can stay active on dormant surfaces for at least several days. So some personal protective measures that people can implement. So voluntary home isolation. So if people are sick, then they should stay away from other people. So if they have jobs, they should stay home from work. If their kids are sick, they should keep their kids home from school. So again, we want to contain the virus and limit the exposure of illness into our population. And then also practice good respiratory etiquette. So instead of sneezing into your or coughing into your hands, you want to sneeze or cough into a tissue, and then throw away the tissue, or sneeze or cough into your arm, and again, wash your hands. It's really important to wash your hands. And when you wash your hands, also make sure you don't touch your face, because again, if you have virus on your face and you touch your eyes or your nose and your mouth, that's how you get infected. So regular hand washing is very important. Use good respiratory etiquette. You know, stay at home away from other people in your household if you are sick, and don't infect other people. Do not be an infectious disease vector. We don't want you to be the case zero that infects everybody else that we've seen in other communities. So,
It's up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so that I did that.
Right. Okay. But, as you see on the screen, if you're sick, don't go to the ER, don't go to the urgent care, call your doctor. Talk to your doctor about your symptoms. If you're not sick or you don't have COVID-19, you really don't want to be in an emergency room or urgent care where someone might actually have it, or they have many other illnesses such as the flu, and we know the flu has been very strong this year across the country. If you're sick, stay home. Don't go to work. Don't go to other places where you can infect somebody else. We have a number of course, personal protective measures that have been reserved for pandemics. You've heard us talk about this before, the voluntary home quarantine. Expose non-ill household members. So exposed but not ill household members must stay home for the 14-day incubation period. So just because you don't have it, but maybe someone else in your family does, you're still required to stay home for the 14-day incubation period. And the use of face masks in the community, as we've talked about, face masks are for those that have illness. If you do not have illness, they really won't protect you. It's to protect the individual from breathing and sneezing and coughing and those germs getting out. So the people that are out there hoarding face masks, thinking that will protect them, the recommendations from the CDC and others and healthcare professionals across the world is that it won't. And then, of course, social distancing, also sometimes referred to as personal distancing. We want to reduce the virus's transmission by reducing frequency and duration of social contact among people, reducing face-to-face contact. Multiple measures have been implemented already. You've heard about it, the recommendations, which we'll go a little bit more into. But you want to separate sick people. If there's someone who's sick at home, you do want to separate them. You want to keep them away from the people who are healthy. You want to increase your distance to approximately 6 feet when you're out in public in the general areas. And this little picture is a perfect example of what we're talking about. I think we all know, well, maybe not, because you don't see too many matchbooks anymore. But for those of you that are a little older, like myself, you'll remember the matchbook and you'd strike the match. But if you hit the first match otherwise in the book, it usually would set off the rest of them, unless you stop somewhere in between. And this little graph is a perfect example of what we're trying to do. Stop the spread of the fire, so to speak, in the matchbooks. Stop the spread of COVID-19, the coronavirus, in our community. And these are the same recommendations we had a couple days ago. which is based on CDC guidelines. We strongly recommend canceling all events with 250 more people in attendance. The governor has already prohibited all events with 500 more people and requires any establishment to, if you have a authorization to have 250 people, to split it in half to 125. This goes for bars and restaurants. So if you have a seating capacity authorized by the Department of Health of 120, you have to go down to 60. And we know that was not happening last night, and I'm very disappointed to hear that. That is not good, because that's how you could spread this in the community. We recommend that people seriously consider avoiding any event or location with 50 or more people, especially if it involves individuals from outside of Erie County. And we strongly recommend that all people over the age of 60 and those with chronic medical conditions do not attend such events. We have health department sanitarians. We will send them out. If we believe that individuals are violating the law, they can be shut down temporarily. I say individuals, I mean individual establishments. If you have a liquor license and you're violating a specific order of the governor, that information will be transmitted to the state liquor authority. What they do with it, they could, but if I was a bar or restaurant and I wanted to have 250 people in my bar and I'm only authorized to have 200, state liquor authority gets it, they could shut you down, potentially permanently. It's probably better to lose a few days of business than to have your liquor license pulled. So we're telling everyone, take this seriously, including the owners of establishments. We do have state health care, or Erie County Department of Health Care sanitarians. Many of them are working to address the COVID-19 issue, but we could send them out, and we will send them out to do spot checks. And if they find out that people are violating their occupancy numbers, they can immediately shut them down, and other actions could be taken in the future. This, of course, was for a two-week evaluation, these recommendations, and of course, we will update those as necessary. The final one, environmental MPIs. If you were in this room about 2 hours ago, you actually would have seen our health department and Department of Public Works buildings and grounds crews actually spraying the room, the doorknobs, the elevators, like they do every day to prevent viruses. We ask the same thing from the general public. Clean your countertops, clean your doorknobs, especially those that have public open locations like bars, restaurants, retail establishments. They have to clean these. Somebody who is ill could touch a countertop and the virus could be on the countertop, and the next person could come and touch it and potentially get the virus. It's important that you clean countertops, doors, handles, you name it, very regularly. There are, of course, lots of EPA certified disinfectants. Erie County received its first batch of the New York State Clean hand sanitizers late last night. That is only for government, but if governments in the area put in orders through our Erie County Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, we ordered it through the New York Responds website. We received our first batch. Governments will be available to pick up their order today. They should contact the Deputy Commissioner of Emergency Services, Greg Butcher, so he can coordinate the receipt and delivery of these. We are asking for governments to pick them up. We will not be delivering them. But these are not for public use, but this is for the local governments. I thank Governor Cuomo for giving us the opportunity to include this in our portfolio, so to speak, our tool belt of being able to keep our governmental offices clean. Now, you noted one of the things that we added was governmentally authorized actions. I have declared a state of emergency in Erie County effective noon today. This will give Erie County more ability and powers to react to the COVID-19 cases in our community and what we expect will be more cases. The three individuals who tested positive for COVID-19 do not have a relationship with each other. I noted they were in three different towns. They do not have a relationship with each other. We believe they acquired it from outside of Erie County, but it was not transmitted between the two of them, though we would not be surprised that there's more cases in our community. And as what was announced by County Executive Adam Bellow yesterday in Monroe County, the second case in Monroe County appears to have been a result of community spread, and they're not certain where that individual actually got it from. So there will be a state of emergency in Erie County effective in 21 minutes. I have talked to the heads of Erie 1 and Erie 2 BOCES. As part of the state of emergency, I am ordering the closure of all schools for tomorrow, Monday, for students. Teachers, administrators, and other staff members are to report as to be directed by your school district. We will be talking in a conference call later today, Doc Burstein and I, as well as the Emergency Service Commissioner, with the school district's representatives. But we did talk to the Erie 1, Erie 2 BOCES heads, and they are spreading out the information that all schools will be closed on Monday, tomorrow, and further direction will be made after we consult over the next 36 hours as to actions to be taken ongoing. We wanted to note there's a lot of requests that we must close schools. We must close schools indefinitely. There is a concern with the closures of schools indefinitely that's also being seen now in some of the other states that did it in regions, just on the impact of the ability for healthcare organizations and public safety organizations to have their staff present to address this issue. I actually talked, I won't say who, but there are three hospital units in our community, Kaleida, ECMC, as well as Catholic Health. I've talked to all three of them over time during the past week. We text regularly, and I've been advised by them and other healthcare individuals, they are very worried about the lack and loss of employees due to a grand closure of schools because parents want to take care of their children. When you close schools like are being done elsewhere and what is being done tomorrow, you are not to go to Chuck E. Cheese with your kids. You are not to go to the mall. You are to stay home. What we're seeing in some of the communities that did the mass closures already is parents are dropping off their kids at one person's house and there's 10 or 15 kids at one person's house. You might as well be in school because they're sharing the information. They take it better. They're sharing whatever viruses might have, and we know that kids are basically full of germs. They can share it, and then they take it home. So with the closure tomorrow, that does not mean that you can all of a sudden go out there and take your kids to some recreational activity outside where there's other people. You're to stay home. But the fear is, if it's an extended closure, if we don't have an ability to put in place measures to ensure that we have adequate staff for health care and public safety, we will be seriously impacted. One president of a hospital unit thought that it's possible they could lose up to 20% of their staff. And we cannot afford to have staff at a large amount disappearing from healthcare organizations in the near future. So that is the primary reason why we will be closed for Monday. And we will be discussing issues over the next 36 hours to determine what is appropriate for school districts. I don't know what is appropriate for every school district. School districts are completely different. The Buffalo Public Schools are different than schools in, say, our rural communities. We know that there are children who get maybe their only hot meal or nutritious meal a day through their school districts. So we will be in consult with the school district superintendents and other representatives of school districts to make a determination of what's appropriate. I would not be surprised to see extended closures, but we want to have those conversations before I order an indefinite closure. Some other communities have done that, but we want to do what's right for the greater community, protecting our children and protecting the public's health, but also ensuring we have adequate staff of public health care workers in our county, health care workers in our hospital and other units, because we have a very large health care organization in this community, and we want to ensure that everything is done properly going forward. So there is a potential negative impact that can arrive as a result or derive as a result of mass closures. Doc Burstein was discussing earlier today, and I'll turn it over to her, that the CDC guidance is not necessarily to close schools indefinitely, unless you basically shut down everything else in the community. Doc?
Sure. So recent CDC guidance around school closures is recommending a very short-term closure, especially in the case where there is an identified case of COVID-19 in a school. So it gives the opportunity for the schools to, one, do a deep cleaning of the school, so make sure that all the surfaces are clean very well, disinfected. And then, two, it gives our epidemiology staff the opportunity to really complete our very in-depth, detailed case investigation of all the cases and make sure that there are no potential exposures in our school districts. And then it also allows the schools to plan for, for the duration of whenever the schools are closed to or dismissed, to provide opportunities for the kids to get food, for the opportunities for the kids to get some meaningful instructions, and then have a planned reopening where and an end game of when we're going to reopen the school. So it's really an opportunity to give us time to the schools to clean, for EPI to do our investigations, and then for the schools to plan. So again, we know that from CDC's looking at data from other pandemics and more recently, and then also using those data for modeling, we know that the closing schools for a short or medium duration really has minimal effect on that EPI curve. What's more effective of that EPI curve is using those non-pharmaceutical interventions like hand washing and physical distancing. And so that's why we're really working with the schools to have a shared decision making about how long the schools will be closed, what they're going to do for their students to give them access to the resources that they need while they're in schools, and then also for an end game when we're going to reopen the school. So that's all very important, because and then also helping to give the message to the parents that not to send their kids to their grandparents' house, because they're the ones that are become very, very ill. So the schools are also looking at some alternate type of supervision activities for the kids when they do reopen, that in smaller learning groups where they'll be less exposed to each other, to enhancing personal distancing.
Thank you, Doc. One action that we are taking that is not even on the screen because it was decided about 45 minutes ago is let me backtrack. Erie County financially is in a strong position, which is a good thing. We have over $100 million fund balance. We were trending to have an $8 to $10 million surplus for 2019. I'm going to be making an immediate request to the legislature to transfer $5 million to be used out of the 2019 expected surplus by my office, the Department of Health, the Department of Homeland Security, Emergency Services, and other departments as necessary to address this. Normally, I think you understand that we would have to go before the legislature for a contract to approve and do purchasing and things like that above and beyond what's already in our budget. But in an emergency situation, it gives us additional powers to do purchases and other things like that as necessary. So I'm asking for the legislature at its next session to immediately approve the appropriation of $5 million to be used by Erie County as determined by the officials that I referenced, without having to go back to the legislature for approval of every contract and every purchase, because we're going to need this additional money in the short term, we know, to adequately respond to the COVID-19 cases in our community and what we expect to be growing cases in the upcoming days and weeks. I'd like to give the opportunity to the Commissioner of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, Dan Nevereth, to talk a little bit more about some of the things that his office is working on and what we're also recommending to the public. So, Commissioner.
Thank you, County Executive. Good morning. Listening to what you've just heard from the County Executive, as well as what you've heard from Doc, it's pretty much the same message that we have had over the last several weeks. I did want to take time out and just pause for a second and acknowledge to those that are viewing this right now, as to the individuals that have dedicated countless hours to get us to this point, to where we're at, to work on solutions to these problems. I cannot think of a better team of individuals across the country than what we have here right in Western New York, whether it happens to be within our county staff, the Sheriff's Office, Department of Public Works, all of the departments that have been working very, very hard. But let's spread that also, that consideration, down to the towns, villages, and cities, and their emergency managers, their first responders, and their elected officials who have been lockstep with this process right from the very beginning. So I think it starts, the recovery and the moving forward starts with confidence. And I just want everyone to know that our working relationships and the things that are being done are the most progressive things that could possibly be done. The county executive alluded to the fact that we are in uncharted territory. We were in uncharted territory when we had 6 feet and then 7 feet of snow. But as we know in Western New York, we roll up our sleeves, we have the appropriate people in place to get through these things, and whether it happens to be a virus or some other type of natural disaster that happens to be out there, this is the place where I would want to be to work our way through this process. But much the same as what we have done during storms and our other disasters, part of that first response and part of that that responsibility has to come from you, the public, the viewers, and the people that are sitting out there. The measures that are taken, the measures that are required to get us through this are being handled by the professionals that can do that. But as you have heard from Doc and the county executive and from people around the world, there's a major part of this responsibility that falls upon you. Take it very seriously. And as a result of that, the team that's working to move things forward, that's giving you the best professional advice that there is out there, is the same team that expects that type of reply from the people that are watching right now. So I can talk about all of the logistics behind the scenes that are going on, but I think the number one message is it is uncharted, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be unsuccessful, because we've seen here, more in Western New York than any place else, that we can move things forward and we can have a quick resolution to the problem.
Thank you, Commissioner. The Commissioner and staff have actually been in touch with the emergency managers of large retail establishments like Wegmans and Tops. There's been a lot of panic buying that we've seen, and we want people to understand that there really is no need for that. The county, while in a state of emergency, will be operating as business normally tomorrow. We'll be talking to businesses that can do remote work. We're asking them to consider doing remote work if they haven't already. The county will be considering remote work for some of our staff, but there's others that have to come in. But we want people to understand the panic buying is not helping things. People are buying supplies and then other in hordes amounts, as we knew, in large amounts, and they're prohibiting their fellow members in the community from buying it that may need it. I've heard stories of people buying baby wipes, as many as they can, and then parents are unable to get baby wipes. We need to act appropriately. Commissioner has confirmed to me that they've spoken to the emergency managers of the major retailers, food operations, the grocers, and they have confirmed that their chain of food and supplies will be coming in. There's no reason to buy 4 months worth of toilet paper, especially considering we're talking about a respiratory illness. The goal is to address this in as short a period as possible. I don't know how long that'll be. I can't sit here and say it'll be 1 week, 2 weeks, or a longer period. When we say we're in solidarity together, that means we are working together, concerned about our fellow citizen, our fellow resident here in Erie County, in Niagara County, in Chautauqua County, in Western New York, and for that matter to our friends in Southern Ontario, because we have a lot of folks who live in Southern Ontario that work in New York and vice versa, and they're married and have spouses from both countries, so we want people to understand we are all in this together. Which means we have to think that way, that we're all in this together. We have from the Erie County Sheriff's Office, Chief Scott Petronic. Scott, would you like to say a few words about just what we expect from the Sheriff's Office?
Thanks, County Executive. So the Erie County Sheriff's Office, we're spinning up our emergency disaster plan. Part of that includes incorporating with the county's overall crisis management and providing any resources we can that are needed either by the county, local governments, or ultimately citizens at large.
Thank you. A final slide is the resources that are available. If you see something on social media that your best friend or your favorite aunt posted, that doesn't mean it's accurate. We had a lot of false information that's been spread in the last week, especially on social media about this person's sick. Oh my God, they're hiding information. They don't know what they're talking about. Doc Burstein is highly recognized as a pediatrician that works with the CDC on specific illnesses. Our New York State Department of Health has incredible individuals, Dr. Greg Young and his staff here. Same thing with our Department of Public Health here. Emergency services in Erie County is considered one of the top-notch in the country, and often we'll discuss the issues that we deal with here when they're training other emergency service places across the country. If you got questions on the health issues, go to Erie County at www.erie.gov/COVID-19, COVID-19. New York State Department of Health, the address is there. The Center for Disease Control, the federal government, of course, opened up the www.coronavirus.gov. We also want to give out a phone number that will be manned by staff from the Erie County Department of Health to answer questions of individuals. It is 716-858-2929. If you have questions regarding your health conditions and you're feeling ill, you should call your doctor first. We do not provide medical services through our Erie County Department of Health like physicians who will analyze and talk to individuals one-on-one. That is what your primary care physician or your health care provider is for. If there are particular questions, in general, we can answer them. We have a limited number of phone lines that will go into the 2929. So if you do get a call, even though we have multiple call takers here, we'll be working during the weekend and, of course, the weekday hours. Want you to understand, if you get a busy signal, that's okay. There's only a certain amount of people, and we're expecting a lot of calls into that phone number. So please take your time. Realize you'll get through. And the other thing, once again, I do want to thank the members of the media and the organizations who understood our request to keep down the number of individuals in this room. We're trying to show, just like everyone else, we don't want to have a mass gathering of folks from multiple organizations. It's very important that the people who are going to be running operations associated with the response to the coronavirus, as well as those who have to report it, are out there doing their work and hopefully not home sick. We don't want to become like Italy. We're seeing all these videos of Italians singing from their apartments, their verandas, and those are wonderful videos. But we don't want to be in that situation where we have to shut down the entire community and no one can go anywhere unless it's authorized by the government. The best way to do that is to not go to mass events, to avoid the spread of the coronavirus, and to understand, as I said once again, we are all in this together. No one can hide from it. There are three communities that have positive cases, three towns, or two towns in one city. We're going into the assumption it's everywhere. It's a virus. It can be spread from person to person. There are probably individuals in Erie County, just like the rest of the counties, who have it and don't even know it because they're not showing symptoms. As has been described repeatedly, if you're over the age of 60, it can have a tremendous impact on your health, including potential for death. There are individuals under the age of 60 who have died from coronavirus across the world. But there are also individuals who have it and don't know it until they actually were tested. So we know that healthy individuals are thinking, hey, everything's great, I'm fine, I can go out and party tonight, no problem. And they may have it, or they may catch it and get what is a mild case of a respiratory illness, thinking they just have a cough or a cold, and pass it on to a loved one who could have serious ramifications, including death. I want people to understand, I'm not trying to scare people, but there are ramifications for inappropriate actions. So we want people and businesses and establishments to act appropriately. We do have a government to run, therefore Erie County government will be open. Our commissioners, department heads, as well as the other independently elected officials are putting in place continuity of operations plans to ensure that we can operate even if we went on a much smaller staff. And we know that businesses are doing the same across our community. So we want everyone just realize we are in this together and we'll get through it together. With that, I'll open it up to any questions. Stephen.
In regards to the three that are tested positive, you've identified gender, age, and the community that they live in. Is there any information that you can share about what line of work they were engaged in? I've already gotten two texts from viewers, contacts of mine, wondering if they worked in, for example, the restaurant industry, or if they worked inside of a school. So what information can be released about their employment or activity that you can share with the public?
We our epidemiology team is rigorously working up these cases and trying to understand like a detailed timeline, a history of where people were at during the time where they could have been contagious, and you know, including exactly what addresses, what times they were there, and so we're taking all that in, and then we are going to notify the places and the individuals that may have come in contact with those specific cases. So the people that have to know are going to be informed by our epidemiology team. So we're not going to discuss with the public each of these individual cases in detail. However, the people that need to know so that they can take the appropriate action of quarantine if they're well, and also the appropriate action of getting tested, will find out. So we will notify those individuals because they need to know, because they need to take action. So, again, it's important as a community, we have to work together to practice these non-pharmaceutical interventions as we can. And those individuals that are at risk because of exposure will be notified of that potential exposure and instructed what they need to do to get tested, and then to stay away from the rest of the community.
But is there any information that you released at all about their employment? I appreciate that you addressed age, gender, communities that they come from in a non-specific way. Is there non-specific information, even general information, about industries or economic segments that they may work in, because this might tamp down some of the false rumors that the county executive would
like to. I will note that a lot of people were critical of us for not doing this press conference last night on social media, but the primary reason is we didn't have anywhere near the information we have right now. And so we are accumulating that information, and if there's information that needs to be shared to the public, we will. But we also have a responsibility to identify through our epidemiologists and the other staff that have been assigned. Nurses have been brought in. We don't have a lot of epidemiologists, but others have been brought in from the public health field to assist us to identify that information, do the contact tracing. If there are employers and so forth that have to be identified, we will or contacted. We are in the process of contacting them. Some of the information you ask, I don't know, Steve. So it's not like I'm hiding something. I don't know all that information. If there's more information that we can provide, we will provide it. But first, we have to actually identify it and then share that information with employers or others that need to know. Sandy?
Your own Erie County Public Health staff, or the ones who are doing the contact tracing, would it make sense to share with the broader public information about where those folks might have gone, might have been? Because I'm sure, having given this general information about where these folks live, they're going to be folks in Grand Island and Clarence, will be wondering, could I have run across this person? And I just think there could be a much greater likelihood that a lot of people would be concerned that maybe they actually could have been in touch with these folks. I'm also unclear on whether or not these folks felt sick and immediately self-quarantined themselves, or were they walking around for long periods of time.
So
that's also unclear.
Right. So again, we're in the process of collecting all that information. And when we do have that information and these individuals were in public places, just like we did with potential measles exposure, we will announce to the public of those locations that where people could have been exposed. And we would also give like the dates and like kind of the window of time where they could have been exposed. But again, this is a very in-depth investigation, and our team is working now to collect that information, notify those individuals, working with those places that could have been where there could have been an exposure, working with them to get the word out, have a plan. So we will notify the public when we have all this information.
I think you'd look at it as how we treat when we had Hep A with pizzerias, where we identified that there was a pizzeria or a restaurant where there was a worker who had hepatitis A, and we identified if you went to this particular restaurant during this period, you may have been exposed to hepatitis A. We'll treat this the same way. We're obtaining that information. If we need to share that information with the public, we will share that information with the public. From the standpoint, we want to protect the public, and the best way is to get that information out. I just don't have all of that right now. And once we do, we'll share it, whether it's a press conference or more likely a press advisory, because it's quicker to do it that way, to just get an advisory out. We can share it with you. We can put it on social media so that if we get confirmation of that, and right now our epidemiologists are doing that in this building. They were doing it late into the night. They had another crew come in. There's other folks. We are doing everything possible to ensure that we identify every individual that may have been in personal contact with that. It's the only thing I could say, and I keep on reaffirming this, because people are like, oh, if I we identified three towns or two towns in a city. They're all in the northern part of Erie County. So someone who's thinking that they may live in Collins, New York, or Sardinia, and I'm just throwing them out there because they're in the southern part of Erie County. And Erie County is a fairly big county size-wise. That, oh, thank God I don't live in the north part. There's nobody here. We're going under the assumption there are people with the coronavirus and COVID-19 elsewhere in our community. Where? I don't know yet. So, and that's part of the problem, is we're telling folks, just because you don't live in a town where this may be doesn't mean that you might not have come in contact with it. People drive on the thruway. We know of lots of counties now that are identifying it. And they may have stopped at a rest stop somewhere on the thruway where someone else from New York stopped and touched that countertop at the McDonald's or the Burger King or the Tim Hortons 1 minute before they did and touched it. And they're thinking, oh, I never came in contact with someone, and they might have. So we want people to understand that this is going to be an evolving matter. And once we have information that needs to be shared with the public, we will share it, because our goal, once again, is to protect the public.
Have you been in contact with the school districts within the municipalities where these cases are? Grand Island, Clarence, City of Buffalo.
At this,
and why not close schools there then, like other communities?
Well, we're closing all schools tomorrow.
More.
And we'll have a further discussion with the superintendents later today when we're on a conference call. It's just, as you can imagine, it's been pretty hectic here. And our number one goal is to ensure that we meet the critical needs as required through our public health department, as required by New York State on reporting. We provided that information to New York State. At the time we provided to New York State, we didn't have anywhere near all the information we had. We just knew that we had three positives. The governor announced it at 7:30. I immediately announced it at the same time with a little bit more, just three positives. But we've accumulated a lot of the information that we announced today since then. And we will continue to share that information as needed. Ms. Marley. Well, there's actually more than that is going on now. Okay. Those were eight that were plated yesterday, and then there were more that were plated and will be done. How many did you say? Well,
31 that we know of, but we're going to be receiving more specimens in today.
Some of them are not from Erie County. Some of them are from outside of Erie County. We are testing in, from other counties that send to us. The two that were identified from Monroe County were identified at our public health lab. So we know that we had a certain amount, and we're going to be doing more through the day. We will keep everyone apprised. At this point, the numbers of tests are that total number, but that's basically Western New York, part of the Finger Lakes region.
As you ramp up the testing, does it get quicker in finding out the results, or is it just kind of as you get more, it's pretty steady?
Right. I mean, the test takes about 5 or 6 hours to run, and before that it takes time to do the appropriate extractions, and then takes time afterwards to do the appropriate readings. So again, with our new instrumentation, we'll be able to do more runs at the same time, and then with if the demand increases, we'll be able to do second periods of runs, or even a third period of runs. So we're going to wrap up based on the demand, but it is a long process, and our public health lab workers, our laboratory workers, are working very, very hard to get these specimens processed and to get the test results out, because we know this is critical information. Everybody's
Tracy
working
next.
Around the clock.
Tracy, next.
Can you talk a little bit more about how concerned you are about capacity in the hospital, both in the number of beds as well as
staff and workers?
We've been in calls daily during this process with the medical directors and medical leadership of our three hospital systems. And, we've been sharing information with them. They've been sharing information with us. And, they've reported that they are concerned about they have a limited number of ICU beds, limited number of ventilators and ECMO machines. We are working with them to make requests for additional assets, for additional ventilators and ECMO. And the hospitals are doing their emergency planning to open up more ICU beds. And we're doing these requests through the New York State Health Department, through New York Response. So we're really trying to increase the capacity of our community to be able to care for those who are very, very ill. So it's a multi-pronged approach. First of all, doing what we can in our community, us all working together to keep the numbers down, to keep the peak as low as possible, and then working with our healthcare infrastructure to expand that capacity to hopefully meet the need. And we know in Italy there's been some as a paper published I think yesterday in JAMA showing the difficult decisions that healthcare systems in Italy had to make because they were beyond their capacity in the hospitals to care for all those that were very, very ill. We do not want to be in that position, so we're working together to try to prevent that.
If I can just
to utilize any of the hospitals that have closed in recent years, those beds that might just be sitting there?
Well, you bring up that point. We're actually looking and examining this on a potential worst-case scenario. We can't just do the best-case scenario. We got to look at the worst-case scenario. So yesterday, myself, Commissioner of Public Works, Bill William Gary, and a couple others from the Department of Public Works, were out at the old Erie County home, an infirmary in Alden, to take a look at the location to see if there were portions of it that theoretically could be reopened. It used to be a hospital. It was a nursing home. And it has, if you walk into it, you would think you're walking into a hospital. There are significant infrastructure things that would need to be done because it was closed, I believe, in 2011. We are going to be talking to contractors this week to talk about what it would take to potentially open up one wing of it if we needed it in a worst-case scenario and how long that would take. So we're looking at everything. I saw Governor Gavin Newsom of California authorized the state and local governments to potentially take over hotels and use those if needed for quarantine of individuals who are not showing symptoms. We're considering what we'd need to do if there are individuals that we have to quarantine outside of a home where they would go, as well as what if we had individuals, so we had such a run on our hospitals, based on the question you talked about, Tracy, where they could be put in a location that would be appropriate, and that's why the old Erie County home came up, because it originally was created as the tuberculosis hospital for this region, was converted over years. But if you walk through it, you would think you're walking through just an older hospital. So these are all discussions that we are having, and there are limitations on what we can do. It's not like we can just flip the switch while there's electricity in that building. There are some serious infrastructure needs that would need to be done to ensure that it is a location that could be used for that purpose.
And it just one thing, the hospitals are, they're also taking other actions like to open up beds. For example, they're canceling elective surgeries so that, they can use the staffing and those staffing and those beds to care for people who are more acutely ill. So there's, different ways to, direct the different hospital services.
Michael.
The governor the other day announced that there's 28 new state testing labs across New York State. How many are here in Erie County, and how much more capabilities do you have to do the testing? Because I believe the number you mentioned the other day was 450.
The governor announced there are 28 that are being authorized, but they have not, to my knowledge, gone online. For example, we believe Roswell Park will be one of those. We think ECMC will be. But as of right now, they do not have the ability to test for this. So we want public to understand there was a rampant rumor that all these tests were being done by ECMC and there's like a whole group of individuals that were there. And the answer is there are no tests that are being done by ECMC, as well as if there were individuals who received tests for ECMC, all of them came back negative. So we believe in the near future that Roswell Park and ECMC will be able to perform tests. But once again, they will be following a very similar protocol. It will have to be based on administered by a doctor. You can't just walk in and get a test. And so we don't want anybody going to ECMC or going to Roswell Park saying, hey, test me, because they can't. Right now, only the Erie County Department of Health Public Health Lab can do that.
For the three people that were diagnosed with coronavirus in Erie County, does anybody that they came in direct contact with in recent days before they were in isolation, will they automatically get a test for coronavirus? What's the process for those people?
I'll let Doc answer that.
Yeah, that is part of the disease investigation. So in the contact tracing is we want to identify close contacts. So that's people who have come and spent some time with individuals within 6 feet of the case. And then so we are collecting that information. We're notifying those individuals, and we're organizing a system where they can get tested, and so we can know what their status is.
You had mentioned also that you don't want people just to rush into the ER just to get tested. They want to go to a primary care physician first to go through that process. What if they don't have a relationship with a primary care physician, and usually they just go to the hospital?
Right. Well, there. First of all, just in terms of you know, seeking services from your primary care physician, you know, if you're suspicious that you have been exposed or you have some symptoms consistent with COVID-19, if it's, you know, mild symptoms that you can manage at home, we would ask you to call your healthcare provider, discuss what your concerns are and your symptoms are over the phone, and they can give you advice how to manage those symptoms at home, just like we would with the flu or other respiratory illnesses. And then if they feel that their patient meets the criteria for testing, they will call the Erie County Health Department, discuss the case with us, and then we'll decide together whether to authorize that person to have a test. Then we'll contact that individual and give them instructions where to go to collect specimens. So if you know, people are do not have a primary care provider, they can, again, you know, call ahead to an urgent care center and discuss their symptoms with them. And, you know, we are taking information from urgent care centers. Again, if people are concerned that they have COVID-19 for because of their symptoms or because of potential contact, and they're well enough to stay at home, we really strongly urge the community to stay at home, call your healthcare provider, and give them the information they need to make that determination. Because again, that usually that interaction can be over the phone.
Yes.
Were the three people who are the confirmed cases, were they in quarantine before they tested positive, or are they in quarantine after?
Yes, they were. We identified them through them reporting a travel history, and so we immediately put them in quarantine, and we arranged for them to get tested because they did have travel risks of exposure. And so they've been in quarantine since we found out about them, since they returned from their trip and reported themselves to the Erie County Health Department.
And what are some of the challenges in trying to just make a list of who they've come in contact with? Because I'm sure that, I mean, is it even possible to have a comprehensive list like that?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. So this is a huge undertaking for our small epidemiology office. And so that is one of the ways we're going to hopefully use this $5 million is to hire more people into our epidemiology office, you know, epidemiologists, clerks, public educators. You know, we need more staff. And so we have an organized approach. We've done this before on smaller outbreaks. And so we're just expanding our current processes. We have a great database. We have, you know, set questions we ask. We put together a timeline. So it's a very systemized approach. Again, we've done this before. We know what to do. It's just on a larger scale. And so we're going to ask to use some of that money to increase our staffing in EPI, you know, increase our staffing of our public health educators to man those phone banks, to be able to give great information to our Erie County residents. And it is a great undertaking, and our folks know how to do it, and they are doing it. And again, that's why it takes a little bit of time. We don't have all that information right away, because you can understand it's a huge undertaking.
No, just before, I'm very pleased we were able to get Karen. We do not have an American Sign Language interpreter on staff, so we have to work with our friends in Deaf Access Services. I just want to ask Karen, are you okay?
I'm hanging in there.
Okay. It's not easy, and especially on a Sunday. Thanks.
What's the protocol for daycares?
I can't say that off the top of my head. Doc, do you have the information?
Daycares are
generally controlled by actually New York state law. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that we can do with regards to reviewing them, but they're generally under the auspices of New York State. If we had information with regards to a particular daycare that we thought was appropriate, we would inform that daycare agency and then probably order similar to what the governor said. You'd want to close for 20 hours or so forth. If we get that information, we'll notify it. But the problem is, you bring up a daycare. I mean, people need daycare. People have to have daycare. They have to have a place to put their children. If they don't, they have to stay home with their children, which has a huge impact on our ability to deliver services, including in the public health and safety fields. I was on the phone with a supervisor yesterday who was exceptionally worried that she was going to lose one-third of her police staff. They didn't have a big department. Not like Buffalo PD, but Buffalo PD certainly has a worry that the parents of children who are home, whether they're daycare or school age, will not be able to report to work. And so we are putting these things in place right now. It's exceptionally difficult.
And, you know, it's not that we don't have, you know, we know what to do. I mean, we are advising our daycares of what to do in terms of non-pharmaceutical interventions. So for daycares, it's really important to wash hands as much as they can. It's really important to clean those highly touched environmental surfaces, especially, you know, toys, the floor, silverware, utensils. It's, you know, and those are all things that we can do, and those have an effect. And so, I don't want the public to think that this is out of control. There's nothing we can do to stop this. There is a lot we can do to stop this, and we're working with our daycare centers and our schools and the community to take the best approach to try to have some control over this. And we do have some control, and that's why people can't be afraid. You know, some of this we can't control, and some of this we can control. And I want people to feel empowered and look at the information that we have on our website and the State Health Department's website and the CDC's website and get that great information to empower us to know what we can do to keep ourselves healthy and protect our community.
Sandra, we have five more minutes. I have to get on a conference call at 12:30, and I know Doc and others have to go back because there's a lot of work. A lot of people know in my office there's a couch. I think I'm going to be utilizing it a lot in the overnight hours in the next few weeks. Sandra?
I know you guys are really understaffed and doing the best you can, but I think there's a real hunger for information. I know that you said that you were doing this contact tracing, but as of right now, we don't know anything about how long any of these folks have been wandering around or whether they put themselves in quarantine right away. So we're interested to know how soon might you be getting back in touch with us, releasing any additional information?
Well, we would definitely do it today. I can't give you an exact hour.
So at some point today, you'll have more updated
yes.
About where those folks were and who needs to be concerned?
As if we found out there was an issue with a school or a daycare or they work in a hospital or something like that, once we've identified that and contact the employer, issues such as that, we will let the public know. Very similar to what we've done like HEPA and things like that, just on a different scale. But I want folks to understand, once again, if we say that individual A lives in Buffalo and works at this establishment, that doesn't mean that you may not have contracted it from someone else. And so we want people to go understanding. There's a reason why we're asking for people to do the appropriate things, to not hoard goods because other people need to purchase them, but actually do appropriate social distancing. And it's like, I was hot last night when I got the pictures that were coming in from bars in our area. I was really hot. And it was disappointing because people were partying. I saw somebody wearing a shirt that said coronavirus can, you know what, kiss my... And I was like, you know what? They're taking this far too lightly. We don't want to be Italy. We don't want to be Wuhan, China. We don't want to be in that situation. I don't want to have the governor in the New York State basically in consultation with us say we have to do a containment zone like they do in New Rochelle. If that's the case, then we've dropped the ball. And as a community, we've been advising appropriately. And I don't want to have to get to a point where we're saying no one can go anywhere and shutting down the community. So I want people to act appropriately.
I just want to follow up to that is, so you guys have been saying that when you had your first cases, as soon as you had a confirmed case, you would disclose that information immediately. But that information was actually first disclosed by the governor's office. It seems like the governor's office has been ahead.
We actually have to disclose it to the state. It goes into the state system. And so, like, we are required, once we have a positive that comes from our office, to identify in the state system and give them as much information at that time as we know of the individual. So we're actually, I want to backtrack. So we said we'd immediately release it. we're required to give it to the state. We had to identify some information. We did, and then at the same time, the governor basically announced it, and we were posting on the website that there were three positives in our community. We did not have anywhere near the information we have right now, so if we had done a press conference with each of you at 8 or 9 o'clock tonight, you would have gotten a lot of dull stares back from us.
So should we be expecting that the governor's office will be the ones that will provide this
information first? No, not, but in this situation, they did. I think the governor just happened to have a press conference scheduled for that time. If you look at what happened in Monroe County, that's a good example. They released it by advisory and said, we will discuss this more in the morning. It wasn't the governor announced it. I think it just happened to be a timing issue.
Right, Sandra? And then the laboratory data automatically from laboratories, including ours, gets entered into the New York State Electronic Clinical Laboratory Reporting System, ECLARES. So this is a statewide reporting system of all reportable communicable disease. So laboratories are programmed if they have a positive test result for a laboratory that would indicate a reportable communicable disease, that gets entered into the New York State ECLARES system, and so then the state receives that information, and then they send it out to the local health department. So we knew about it first because it was our lab that did this, and at the same time the lab automatically enters those data into the ECLARE system. So again, we had to, when we found out the information that we needed to obtain to put out inform the public, we did that immediately. And then now this morning, when we have additional information that is helpful for the community, we're doing that again. And then when we have more information later today, we'll let you all know. Like, you, the media are our partners, and you help us get the information out.
Okay, one more question, Stephen, and then anybody else has additional questions can leave those questions with the media, and we'll try to get back with you with answers.
Our sanitarians out. It's St. Patrick's Day weekend. The parades were canceled, but I've seen videos on Facebook suggesting that people are out and about and enjoying the weekend. Perhaps in a way that you don't need.
I'm not happy with it.
Sanitarians out checking bars.
They will be today. We can't have every single one of them because a number of them have been transferred to address this issue of the coronavirus. But we are going to have a few of them out. But every bar that's out there that potentially has it, they should go under the assumption someone might stop by. And if they stop by and they find that you're violating the law, they will write you up. They have the ability to immediately shut down the facility, especially now that we're in a state of emergency. Any information that shows you're violating the state standards, we'll pass that on to the state and the state liquor authority. If the state liquor authority thinks that you violated a directive of the governor during a state of emergency, I would not want to go down that road about arguing why you need to keep your liquor license. So to the bars and establishments out there, standard is half. If you're authorized for 100, you can have 50. Simple as that. We have to go, folks. I thank everyone. We will be providing updates as necessary.